and welcome to episode 143 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
So we have two reviews for you this week. We're going to do a mini review of the new comedy, Office Christmas Party, and then we're going to do a bigger review of Damien Chazelle's latest, La La Land. Christy, you have Office Christmas Party first.
Yeah, so here's the plot synopsis for Office Christmas Party. When his uptight CEO sister threatens to shut down his branch, the branch manager throws an epic Christmas party in order to land a big client and save the day, but the party gets way out of hand. This is from the guys who brought us the Switch Up? The Switch, which is that really awkward movie where Jason Bateman, like, puts his baby batter accidentally in his best friend, and then it's like, oh, surprise, the kid you thought was on artificial insemination from a stranger is actually mine, but it's supposed to be sweet and not super creepy and rapey. This movie is not creepy and rapey, and to their credit, they actually do some things that are not something that comedies tend to do. Like, they have Asian male characters who actually have sex drive, so that's something that's different. And they have women in positions of power, including CEO and engineer and pimp. But it's still kind of lame.
I think I'm kind of with you on that. I really wanted it to be better just because I think we're long overdue for, you know, a really fun, zany comedy. And I liked the idea of getting an Office Christmas Party movie around this time of year. I like this ensemble, but, you know, I mean, what do you expect from this kind of thing? The story is just really, it's stupid. Some of the jokes are kind of funny, but a lot of the jokes are just so outlandish and absurd that you're gonna roll your eyes at them. I think for me, the one thing this movie had going for it was, you know, that family vibe at work. You know, mm-hmm. as they realize they have to work together in order to save the company. That, because I did start to come to like some of the people that totally worked in the office, and I liked them as friends. I liked them as teammates. This is actually the first time that I really liked Olivia Munn in a movie. Like, I think her character was probably my favorite character. Oh, even though, like, you know, I didn't really buy her as, oh, I'm a super smart technical person that's going to come up with a genius idea, that I didn't really, I didn't buy that at all, but
I didn't buy her romance with Jason Bateman is my problem.
Oh, I kind of found that, like, oddly charming and different. It's not the kind of, you know, it's not the kind of typical studio blockbuster romance that you would expect, but I did like their relationship.
Well, but in a world where everyone's super goofy, they're both the straight man. And then they're like, and they fall in love. And I'm like, they would be the most boring couple ever. I'd be like, so do you want to get pizza? Yeah, pizza. And that's just their relationship. And I was like, boring, tired.
They have some fun. They did that little dance together. Come on.
That dance is purely for the trailer.
I'd say so.
Yeah. I did like T.J. Miller in this. He plays the version of T.J. Miller that's very sweet and childlike, and that plays really well with his environment. I wish there was more time spent on the office relationships, because since that is mm-hmm. supposed to be the theme and focus of the film, you would think that it would be a little more developed. But, like, there are characters in this that are in it for a hot second, and then characters who aren't introduced until, like, the late second act. So you're like, oh, I get, like, how big is this office? Like, it
there's also
changing
a lot of time wasted on, you know, the music video style coverage of the party, where if you had trimmed that in half, that would have been a lot more screen time to give to developing relationships and characters.
Totally. But I have to say, my favorite character in the movie is actually
Courtney B. Vance.
Oh, he's great, actually. Like,
I could watch him get drunk and party for a full 90 minutes, even if there was no plot to that movie.
Sure. People who don't remember, Courtney B. Vance does, like, a lot of Law & Order stuff, and he was Johnny Cochran in The People vs. O.J. Simpson. But my favorite was actually Jillian Bell as a pimp. Because Angie's making, like, a really face, because it, like, starts off where later she's like this escort's like, first she has to talk to my pimp, and this huge burly dude rolls out of a car, and the guy's like, oh, hey, let me talk to your pimp, let me walk over, and then he opens the car door for Jillian Bell, who's got, like, weird braids in her hair, and she's wearing, like, cheetah print, and she's like, hey, I'm Trina, so good to meet you, so I need the money right now. Key, thanks. But then it's like they actually play with it in a way where I talked to the directors for Nerdist, and we were talking specifically about why they wanted to have not just a female pimp, but Jillian Bell play the pimp. And like a lot of things that Jillian Bell is in, she, to me, was the best thing in this movie. And there's some, like, there are so many good people in this movie. There's Kate McKinnon and Rod Corddry, and there's so many good comedians that there's inevitably good stuff in this. It's just really hit or miss. Like, I would say probably for every 5 jokes, I laughed at 1 or 2.
So would you guys say overall, like, is this worth watching at all? Like, is it
if you're the kind of person that really likes this ensemble and you really like this kind of movie, like, you're really into R-rated studio comedies, it's harmless, you know? It is kind of just like a sit back and relax and have fun with your friends on a weekend. Like, go with a bunch of friends.
If you were drinking and watching this, if you had a flask in your hand when snuck into the theater, then it wouldn't be so bad. Angie's making faces.
Is like 9 Lives?
It's not as outlandish as 9 Lives, but there is way more stuff that would make me want to turn to my flask.
There should have been a 9 Lives crossover where, like, their office showed up
where
at this
Jennifer
one.
Aniston's character becomes a cat.
What? Well, then I'm
Hello,
pretty sure
Hollywood.
We just got the next
we
big
have a
cinematic universe
idea.
Right here. Holy
and
shit!
That is whatever
I love
studio wants.
I love that idea. Wait. So her character turns into the cat, and like T.J. Miller is her inside man, where he's the only one who could try to help her. Like, just
yes. Are you saying that in this cinematic universe, there's like a whole like fleet, like a whole team of like people with Christopher Walken like powers, where they can just turn mean CEOs into cats?
I feel like it'd be more like T.J. Miller just knows because he meets the cat and he's like, I recognize my sister.
Like he's the one who figures it out.
We're like running into La La Land time to pitch our own sequel.
Oh my god. I do love that idea though. All right. So
let's move on. So yeah,
it's fine.
It's like if you really are looking for something raunchy and randy, you know, your options are Bad Santa 2 or this. I didn't see Bad Santa 2, so.
But it sounds like it might be worth watching if you're like going to get invested in the 9 Lives cinematic universe.
Right, which as everyone knows, Angie and I are deeply invested.
That sums that up. All right, so now we're going to move on to La La Land, which couldn't be more different and is currently a front runner in a number of awards categories right now. Here is the super short IMDb synopsis. A jazz pianist falls for an aspiring actress in Los Angeles. You know
Accurate.
What? That's good. That's good. I've seen this movie twice now. I absolutely love every second of it. It's one of those movies to me where it's like, you know, when you get your favorite scene in a movie and you rewatch something and you look forward to that scene coming up. I had like 20 of those scenes in this movie. So when I went down to see it, when I sat down to see it again, I can't wait for that opening. Then the opening's over and I'm like, oh, I can't wait for the dance in her house. Then if that's over, I'm like, oh, I can't wait for his piano solo. And there's just so much in it. It's a beautiful movie to look at. I love the music in it. It's like, they have a number of songs in here that are just really catchy, but it's also a great mix between catchy tunes and also just some really incredible jazz piano. I actually have my CD right here, and I can't
Someone
stop.
Got a promo CD.
I don't really care all that much for male swag, but that could have been interpreted very differently.
Perry loves male swag. She loves it.
For swag that arrives in my mailbox, but even before I received anything from La La Land, I had already firmly decided that this was my favorite movie of the year, and then did I get the soundtrack of the movie, they sent me a copy of the script that's signed by Damien Chazelle, and I don't think I'll ever cherish like a mailer more ever. I love this movie. It made me happy. It made me feel hopeful about being out in LA and like taking the plunge and trying to achieve something. And at the same time, there's like a really bittersweet quality to it also that kind of, you know, puts hopes and dreams into perspective in a not dismal way, but you know, it doesn't really wrap everything up so neatly at the end and kind of send you on your way.
It didn't occur to me when I was watching it how much this would relate to you personally, Perry,
yeah,
a person that moved from somewhere else to Los Angeles to chase her dreams. I saw this one at TIFF, which is, I guess, where it premiered or something. Anyway, but yeah, the opening credit, the opening sequence, like it opens with a dance number on a freeway, and that one just blew my mind. Like, you should have seen me. I was like sitting there in the theater with like my mouth open and my hands covering my mouth because I was just so overcome with like how delighted I was by it. That said, I didn't end up loving the whole thing as much as you did, and it's not even like I think that there's anything like drastically wrong with it. But for example, for starters, I think that the first half of the movie, which is the happier part, works a lot better than the part where it gets to be bittersweet. And I mean, you guys know me, like it's not like I have any objection to movies that are sad or bittersweet or like have kind of that darkness to it, but for whatever reason, it just didn't kind of work as well. One thing I will say, though, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. So Crazy Stupid Love is a movie that I find crazy problematic, but I really enjoy. And they have incredibly good chemistry. And that this movie, I think, makes the best of their chemistry. And not only that, but I think it makes really good use of what we like about both those actors. Like, Ryan Gosling plays a guy who is, you know, he's chatty, he's charming, he's a little bit pretentious, he's a little bit of a dick, but you still like him. Like, that is right up Ryan Gosling's alley, like, so much more than a lot of the other roles that he plays. So I loved him in this. I thought that neither of them are, it's pretty obvious that neither of them are, like, primarily singers. Like, their voices are good, they're not incredible, but Emma Stone gets a third act number that just brought the house down.
Oh my
like,
god.
I didn't love the second half as much, but that one just I was just like watching it in shock. I was like, wow, that isn't it's incredible. So yeah, I mean, I didn't love it as much as Perry, but overall I still thought, yeah, it was fun, it was unusual, it was sweet, I liked it.
And now here I come as the dark fucking storm cloud. So here's the thing. I really expected to love this movie because of the word out of TIFF, because I love 1950s style musicals and it owes a great debt to those movies. There's a lot of stuff that is like very much pulled from Gene Kelly things, and I was very into that idea. The colors are beautiful. The costumes are really cool. But I just never felt fully on board with this movie. Like, I really liked the opening and thought it was fun, but I found like the lyrics were just kind of very like, they felt really first draft to me. Like, there's just kind of like, you know, and when the movie was over, I couldn't, like, when I walked out of Moana, I had three different songs constantly fighting to be stuck in my head. I walked out of this, and the only thing I remember from the music is the City of Stars. I remember nothing else. Like, I remember no other lyric. I remember some general things that the songs were about, but I couldn't remember anything else. And I loved them in Crazy Stupid Love, even though, again, I'm not a fan of that movie either, but I thought they were great in it. In this, I felt like they made Ryan Gosling, he cranked up the pretentious kind of being a prickly pear situation high enough that I was like, why is she into him? Like, I get you, like, he looks like Ryan Gosling, but he flat out fucking shoulder checks her on their like second meet cute. And I thought, fuck this guy. And like, I just had a really hard time understanding why they were together. And then the screenplay, the way they talk to each other, it's like, he's like, well, if you want to be an actor, he's like, why, you know, what's it like being an actress? And she's like, I wish I got better roles. He's like, why don't you write your own role? And she literally is like, no one's ever said that to me before. Like, it's the first thing every person who's ever met an actress says. And it's so condescending and so pandering. But in it, she's like, that's genius. And so she goes and does that. And then similarly, she gives him advice where she's like, you should do this thing. And it's, again, advice that anybody would give you. But he's like, you're a genius. And it's just like, the script really bugged me because I thought, like, it's full of charm. I get that. It's totally full of charm. It's pretty. It's lovely. But the story itself is so simple that it just feels like the easiest story to tell about, like, trying to chase a dream in Los Angeles.
But that, to me, that felt like a strength. Like, it's not claiming to be like some like really complicated layered story. It really is just a very simple story about two people that fall in love, but then for various reasons they're pulled apart.
And it made it very personal to them in particular, which is why I think you can get away with going with a simple premise like that. It's like, that's exactly, without getting into spoilers, that's kind of what the ending of the movie kind of hints at too. It's like, maybe you would think that, you know, in typical movie world, someone would achieve their dreams and live happily ever after, but there's no way for just these two individual people to both get exactly what they want, you know?
Sure.
And it's because of who they are within this familiar situation, which is what makes their story in particular so different.
I think the resolution aims for more risk and depth than the rest of the movie does. Like, there's no other, like, characters aside from the two main characters have no arc in this film. There's no subplot. It is just these two having a romance and however that shakes out. And it's fine. It's pretty. It's cute. I didn't think it was good. Like, I'm astonished that, like, the people that I keep hearing talking about how good the soundtrack is and how good the music is are people who have seen it two or three times. With Moana, like, I had those songs stuck in my head immediately, and I was obsessed with them immediately. And with this, I didn't have that. And like I said, it really surprised me, because this kind of musical that is about, like, going for your dreams and that is very 1950s in feel is typically, my jam. Like, I love Singing in the Rain. I love watching, like, An American in Paris. And there's a lot of, like, allusions to that style.
I didn't have these songs stuck in my head because I saw the movie twice. I got them stuck in my head first, and then I needed to experience them again, not just on a trailer. Because the second I got home from this movie, like, I was humming particular songs, especially City of Stars, and Audition was definitely stuck in my head, and the opening number was as well. But the first thing I did when I got home was I went online and I looked up the trailers so I could watch them and experience them again, because I had so much fun. That opening number kicks off this movie with so much excitement and momentum. I thought that was just the most brilliantly shot thing. And it is similar to Moana in a sense that, you know, musical numbers in La La Land aren't just there because it's a musical and, oh, you need a musical number every X amount of minutes. Every single thing is key to their personal character arcs at any given moment in the movie.
I just think, I get it. I think it's very charming. I just think it's story-wise very weak. And that bummed me out, because after all the hype out of the festivals, like, I expected a lot more than this movie ultimately delivered. And I was actually kind of troubled by the fact that I feel like the casting of Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling gets in the way a little bit, because they are the most famous people in this movie. So when the whole thing is supposed to be about, like, will they make it in Hollywood? It kind of feels like, oh, fucking course they will. Like, it, you know what I'm saying? And then on top of that, it's like, this started to bug me too, where everybody in the background, like, there's always people of color in the background of Los Angeles in this film, or, like, being, like, side characters, like a couple of her roommates, or John Legend pops in for a couple of seconds. But, like, none of, like, the main characters that we deal with the most are people of color, and that started to feel really weird to me, especially because if they had cast someone who is not, you know, Emma Stone gorgeous or Ryan Gosling gorgeous and white, there might have actually been some more, like, stakes about whether or not they'd make it, because we are in whitewashed Hollywood. And that's what I'm saying when I talk about the idea that this is, like, the most easy LA story. Like, it feels like it was made for award season, where it's just being like, Hollywood, aren't we great? We followed our dreams and we succeed. And it's just like, that's fine. But I kind of just want more from a movie that's everyone's calling Best Picture.
I didn't really think much about that at all, just because these two characters and who they were just worked really well for me in the context of the movie. And I understand maybe pointing out that very few of the supporting characters they're not highlighted. Like, the supporting characters are pretty much just there to fill out their world and show you how mm-hmm. those players affect their journey. But, you know, maybe John Legend stuck out a little bit. I did like seeing John Ryan Legend's Gosling having his sister. I think that was, you know, actually there's a good example of an appropriate use of a supporting character who doesn't need her own arc. Showing Rosemarie DeWitt as Ryan Gosling's sister early on in the movie, that was exactly what I needed, precisely at the right time, to explain to me really quickly what kind of person he was, without saying, like, oh, he did this and this and this, and spelling it out. It was just an incredibly well-shot scene with the two of them just navigating his apartment and her cleaning stuff up for him. And it said so much about their relationship. It said so much about who he was and how he lives and what he cares about.
But then their relationship is irrelevant for the rest of the movie.
Because it's not a story about their relationship.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, the scale of this movie is so small.
But think about how you interact with some of your family. It's like, I can actually say from personal experience out here, so if I'm going to, you know, tell a story about my journey in LA and me trying to do what I want to do, and it includes my sister would pop up for one scene, and then she would be gone, and then I would be focusing on work. So the balance here made sense to me.
I get that, but my complaint about this movie is, like, I get that you like that it's this small, but for me it was a big issue, because I feel that there's a way to tell an intimate story that still feels like it feels, you know, challenging and interesting and daring. Like, I think Moonlight tells an intimate story where we don't focus on a lot of characters besides him. like, you know, the main character of that is really whose growth we follow. Maybe you arguably his mom, but like, it still felt like a world that I was really ingratiated into, where this just felt like, you know, these characters, let's move along. And it's cute. I'm astonished. I think it's really overrated. I'm glad that you liked it. I'm not saying that, like, I don't understand why you didn't like it. Like, I get why you liked it. I just, after everything I heard, I expected a lot more from this movie.
Do you think that you would have liked this movie better if you hadn't heard so much hype ahead of time? Because it sounds like that's kind of an issue for you.
I mean, like, I enjoyed it, but it's like, you know, I mean, by the time I saw it, everybody was talking about it like it was, you know, going to fix all my ills and it was going to make me the happiest person alive. And I was like, this is cute. But like, even with during the course of the film, it's not like I look and go, what can I rip apart? But I was sitting there and just, they kept talking about like, I just don't know if my dreams are ever going to happen. And I was like, all right, Emma Watson, like, slow your roll. You're the prettiest girl in this movie. You're the most famous girl in this movie. And you have nothing working against you, like, because you're a pretty white girl who has, like, talent and is darling. Like, it felt like the stakes are as low as they could possibly be, and that really frustrated me.
I mean, I can kind of see why, I think that I'm probably like it more than Chrissy did and less than Perry did. And Chrissy, I can kind of see why you don't. Like, it sounds like, for one thing, you expected much different things from this movie than what it wanted to deliver, or wanted much different things from this movie than what it wanted to deliver. And going back a little bit, you talked about how you really didn't like the Ryan Gosling character that much. And I mean, that's like I can, as much as I did like the movie, I can completely see how if you wanted something different and you don't really like the characters, then yeah, like I can understand why you're just kind of like meh on it. Like, yeah, if you have nothing invested in the main characters and you don't buy into them, then like then all the magic starts to feel phony. So I can kind of, I mean, yeah, like I see where you're coming from is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think anybody who goes into La La Land thinking that they're going to walk out being all happy and wonderful and feel like they can achieve anything in life, they're going to be disappointed, because that's not really the story this movie is trying to tell. I think the perfect way to describe La La Land is bittersweet, and the mix of those two emotions is kind of what made it, you know, so poignant and touching and really unforgettable to me.
But from a very Hollywood perspective, like, I get what you're saying. It's not like 100% up Hollywood ending, but it's still a very Hollywood ending.
It's like that kind of story, but with the showmanship of a fun, bright musical, you know? Like, that's just the style the movie was made in.
I want to say what it reminded me of, but I'm afraid it's a huge spoiler. So I'm going to, it reminded me of a different musical that everybody was stoked about that is nowhere near as glossy, and it came out in 2009. So I guess do your movie math and you'll know what I'm referring to.
All right, so to wrap up, I mean, obviously, you guys have very different opinions. Is this a movie you tell people to watch?
I mean, like I said, I wouldn't tell people not to see it. I think manage your expectations. I feel like the hype of this is going to have people going in expecting something that's not going to deliver. It's cute. It's a cute movie. If you want something upbeat and chipper this holiday.
Yeah, I think that it's fun. I think that it's, you know, it's unusual. Like, it's not very much like a lot of other movies I've seen this year. So, you know, and Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone have great chemistry. It's not like a movie that I walked out being like, wow, this is one of my favorites ever. But yeah, like, I think it's fun. I think if the trailers appeal to you, then they do a pretty good job of selling the movie's kind of like candy-colored, bittersweet vibe.
I can't recommend it enough. I still have a small handful of movies left to catch this year, but I'd be absolutely shocked if anything surpassed this as my favorite movie of the year. It was fun to watch. It's incredibly well shot. I love the music. I love the two of them together. It was really touching and had some actual meaning to it in the end, so it wasn't just like fun and la 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 and singing and all that stuff. It meant a lot to me. And
I just want to point out that I think it's really interesting that you like this movie so much and I didn't, because I feel like when it comes to musicals, like I'm way more the soft touch on that.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm probably not a huge musical person, but I think it worked especially well in this case, and I will be rooting for La La Land in almost every category it should be nominated for this year.
I mean,
so
it sure does continue the trend of you guys disagreeing on every fucking movie this year. So
I know what happened. Harry moved to LA, we agree on nothing.
I don't know.
All right, well, we should close out.
Putting our top 10 list together is going to get super interesting this
year.
Yeah,
really. I'm curious now. All right, so that's it. That's a wrap on episode 143 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know what to do. Go on over to iTunes, where you can comment, rate, subscribe. Please like us on Facebook. We're on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. And then all three of us are all over the internet. Christy, do you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you guys can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. I write for Collider.com, and I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Oh, it's not a Christmas party. It's a non-denominational holiday mixer. More inclusive.